Here is Dr. Covey.
The world has changed dramatically since The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People was first published. Life is more complex, more stressful, more demanding. We have transitioned from the industrial age into the information knowledge worker age, with all of its profound consequences. We face challenges and problems in our personal lives, our families, and our organizations unimagined even 1 and 2 decades ago. These challenges are not only of a new order of magnitude, they are altogether different in kind. These sweeping changes in society and the rumbling shifts in the digitized global marketplace gives rise to a very important question, one that I'm asked fairly often. Are the 7 habits of highly effective people still relevant today? And for that matter, will they be relevant 10, 20, 50, 100 years from now? My answer is very simple. The greater the change and the more difficult our challenges, the more relevant the habits become. Why? What's the reason? Why would they become more relevant? It's because our problems and our pain are universal and increasing, and the solutions to the problems are and will always be based upon universal, timeless, self-evident principles common to every enduring, prospering society throughout history. I did not invent these principles. I take no credit for them. I've simply identified and organized them into a sequential framework. One of the most profound learnings of my life is this. If you want to achieve your highest aspirations and overcome your greatest challenges, identify and apply the principle or natural law that governs the results you seek. How we apply a principle will vary greatly and will be determined by our unique strengths, talents, and creativity. But ultimately, success in any endeavor is always derived from acting in harmony with the principles to which the success is tied. Many people do not think this way, at least consciously. In fact, you will increasingly find that principled solutions stand in stark contrast to the common practices and thinking of our popular culture. Allow me to illustrate this contrast with a few of the most common human challenges we face. First, fear and insecurity. So many people today are gripped with a sense of fear. They fear for the future. They feel vulnerable in the workplace. They're afraid of losing their jobs and their ability to provide for their families. This vulnerability often fosters a resignation to riskless living and to codependency with others at work and at home. Our culture's common response to this problem is to become more and more independent. People say, I'm going to focus on me and mine. I'll do my job, I'll do it well, and then get on to my real joys off the job. Independence is an important, even vital value and achievement. The problem is, we live in an interdependent reality, not an independent one, and our most important accomplishments require interdependency skills, well beyond our present abilities. Second, I want it now. People want things, and they want them now. I want money, I want a nice big house, a nice car, the biggest and best entertainment center. I want it all, and I deserve it. Though today's credit card society makes it easy to get now and pay later, economic realities eventually set in, and we are reminded, sometimes very painfully, that our purchases cannot outstrip our ongoing ability to produce. Pretending otherwise is unsustainable. The demands of interest are unrelenting and unforgiving. Even working hard is not enough. With the dizzying rate of change in technology and increasing competition driven by the globalization of markets and technology, we must not only be educated, we must constantly re-educate and reinvent ourselves. We must develop our minds and continually sharpen and invest in the development of our competencies to avoid becoming obsolete. At work, the bosses drive results, and for a good reason. Competition is fierce. Survival is always at stake. The need to produce today is today's reality and represents the demand of capital. But the real mantra of success is sustainability and growth. You may be able to meet your quarterly numbers, but the real question is, are you making the necessary investment that will sustain and increase that success 1, 5, and 10 years from now? Our culture and Wall Street screams for results today. But the principle of balancing the need to meet today's demands with the need to invest in the capabilities that will produce tomorrow's success is unavoidable. The same is true of your health, your marriage, your family relationships, and your community needs. Third, blame and victimism. Whenever you find a problem, you will usually find a finger pointing, a blame. Society is addicted to playing the victim. Such words as, if only my boss wasn't such a controlling idiot. If only I hadn't been born so poor. If only I had lived in a better place. If only I hadn't inherited such a temper from my dad. If only my kids weren't so rebellious. If only the other departments didn't mess up orders all of the time. If only we weren't in such a declining industry. If only our people weren't so lazy and without drive. If only my wife was more understanding. If only. If only. Blaming everyone and everything else for our problems and challenges may be the norm and may provide temporary relief of the pain, but it also chains us to those very problems. Show me a man or woman who is humble enough to accept and take responsibility for their circumstances and courageous enough to take whatever initiative is necessary to creatively work their way through or around their challenges, and I'll show you the supreme power of choice. Fourth, hopelessness. The children of blame are cynicism and hopelessness. When we succumb to believing that we are victims of our circumstances and yield to the plight of determinism, we lose hope, we lose drive, and we settle into resignation and stagnation. We think, I am a pawn, a puppet, a cog in the wheel and can do nothing about it. Just tell me what I should do. So many bright, talented people feel this and suffer the broad range of discouragement and depression that follows. The survival response to popular culture is cynicism. Just lower your expectations of life to the point that you aren't disappointed by anyone or anything. Expect nothing and you're never disappointed. The contrasting principle of growth and hope throughout history is the discovery that I am the creative force of my life. Fifth, lack of life balance. Life in our cell phone society is increasingly complex, demanding, stressful, and absolutely exhausting. For all of our efforts to manage our time, to do more, to be more, and to achieve greater efficiency through the wonders of modern technology, why is it that we increasingly find ourselves in the thick of thin things, subordinating health, family, integrity, and many of the things that matter most in our lives and to our work? The problem is not our work, which is the sustaining engine of life. It's not the complexity or change. The problem is that our modern culture says, go in earlier, stay later, be more efficient, live with the sacrifice for now. But the truth is that balance and peace of mind are not produced by these. They follow the person that develops a clear sense of his or her highest priorities and who lives with focus and integrity toward them. Six, what's in it for me? Our culture teaches us that if we want something in life, we have to look out for number one. It says life is a game, a race, a competition, and you better win it. Schoolmates, work colleagues, even family members are often seen as competitors. The more they win, the less there is for you. Of course, we try to appear generous and cheer for other successes, but inwardly, privately, so many of us are eating our hearts out when others achieve. Many of the great things in the history of our civilization have been achieved by the independent will of a determined soul. But the greatest opportunities and boundless accomplishments of the knowledge worker age are reserved for those who master the art of we. We, not me. True greatness will be achieved through the abundant mind that works selflessly with mutual respect and for a mutual benefit. 7. The hunger to be understood. Few needs of the human heart are greater than the need to be understood, to have a voice that is heard, respected, and valued, to have influence. Most believe that the key to influence is communication, getting your point across clearly and speaking persuasively. In fact, if you think about it, don't you find that while others are speaking to you, that instead of really listening to understand, you are often preparing your own response? The real beginning of influence comes as you sense you are being influenced by them. That is, when they really feel understood by you, that you have listened deeply and sincerely, and that you are open. But most people are too vulnerable emotionally to listen deeply, to suspend their agenda long enough to focus on understanding only before they communicate their own ideas. Our culture cries out for it, even demands understanding and influence. However, the principle of influence is governed by mutual understanding, born of the commitment of at least one person to deep listening first. 8. Conflict and differences. People share so much in common, yet are so magnificently different. They think differently. They have different and sometimes competing values, motivations, and objectives. Conflicts naturally arise out of all of these differences. Society's competitive approach to resolving the conflicts and differences tends to center on winning as much as you can. Though much good has come from the skillful art of compromise, where both sides give a little until an acceptable middle point is reached, neither side ends up truly pleased. What a waste to have differences drive people to the lowest common denominator between them. What a waste to fail to unleash the principles of creative cooperation in developing solutions to problems that are better than either party's original idea. 9. Personal stagnation. Human nature is four-dimensional: body, mind, heart, and spirit. Consider the differences and fruits of the two approaches. First, for the body. The cultural tendency is to maintain our lifestyle, to treat health problems with surgery and medication. Now, what's the principle? Prevent diseases and problems by aligning your lifestyle to be in harmony with established, universally accepted principles of health. Now let's look at the mind. The culture says, watch television, entertain me. What's the principle? Read broadly and deeply. Continuous education. Let's look at the heart. The culture says, use relationships with others to forward your personal selfish interests. But what's the principle? Deep, respectful listening and serving others brings the greatest fulfillment and joy. And regarding the dimension of spirit, the culture teaches, succumb to the growing secularism and cynicism. The principle is this: recognize that the source of our basic need for meaning and of the positive things we seek in life comes from principles. which natural laws, I personally believe, have their source in God. We have just covered 9 very common, universal human challenges. We could almost go on endlessly. But let's stop at this point, because I want to invite you to keep both these universal challenges and your own unique needs and challenges in mind. As you do, you will find enduring solutions and direction. You will also find the contrast between the popular culture's approach and the timeless, principled approach of the ages. It will become more and more evident to you. In fact, it will deeply resonate with the deepest part of your own nature. On a final personal note, I want to repeat a question I constantly pose in my teaching. How many on their deathbed wish they'd spent more time at the office? Or watching TV? Basically, the answer is no one. I've reviewed the deathbed literature. They think about their loved ones, their families, and those they have served. Even the great psychologist Abraham Maslow, at the end of his own life, put the happiness and fulfillment and contributions of his posterity ahead of his self-actualization, which was the top need of his famous need hierarchy. He called all of this self-transcendence. This is so true with me. By far the greatest and most satisfying impact of the principles embodied in the 7 habits comes out of the lives of my children and grandchildren. For example, my 19-year-old granddaughter, Shannon, was drawn to serve the orphans of Romania and wrote Sandra and me of an epiphany she had one day after a little sick child threw up on her and then reached out for a hug. In that moment, Shannon inwardly resolved, "I don't want to live a selfish life anymore. I must spend my life in service." And as of this writing, she has returned to Romania and is still serving the people. All of our children are married and with their spouses have developed principle-based mission statements focused on service. To see them live these mission statements gives us joy in our posterity. We have also had tens of thousands of people tell us of the significant impact of becoming the creative force of their own lives through internalizing the 7 habits. 76 of them shared the details of their fascinating stories of courage and inspiration in the little book, Living the 7 Habits, showing the transforming power of the principles in all kinds of personal, family, and organizational settings, regardless of their circumstances, or their organizational position, or their prior life experiences. As you now commence reading the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, I also promise you an exciting learning adventure. Share with your loved ones what you are learning. And most importantly, start applying what you are learning. Because remember, to learn and not to do is really not to learn. To know and not to do is really not to know. I have personally found that living the 7 habits to be a constant struggle, primarily because the better you get, the very nature of the challenge changes, just like skiing or playing golf or tennis or any sport does. Because I sincerely work and struggle every day at living these principle-embodied habits, I warmly join you in this marvelous adventure.